Blog Talk Radio.
You know the landlord rang my front door bell. I let him ring for a long, long spell. I went to the window and he threw the blind and asked him to tell me what was on his mind. He said, "But honey, you all with me."
Good morning, everyone. This is James Dick, and I am North Florida Writer Live. And this morning, we're going to talk about the election again. Last show about the election, 2016, we discussed the immigration issue. Today we're going to talk about something that is directly related to the immigration issue for a lot of reasons, and it's the jobs problem. And my title is "The Jobs Problem and the Solution Is?" Jobs, jobs, jobs. Politicians promise them. Politicians tout what they've done. But in recent years, the results have been dismal. Why? Because politicians don't create jobs, but they can certainly support a government climate that encourages jobs. And to make it meaningful, it has to be directed at small business, for that's where the job opportunities are. But they are only there if the climate is created to make it easy for entrepreneurs to build a business. The old crony capitalist empires don't create anything except wealth for their corporate owners and their government cronies. And that's what we've got today. We've got a government, large corporate partnership, basically sucking the life right out of us. Before we go further, let's take a look at the pictures. First is a picture of unemployment lines. And you say, well, why do you show unemployment lines? Because, after all, the unemployment rate is now all the way down to 4.7%. Really? No, the reason I don't show the unemployment lines is because nobody's standing in line anymore because they've given up. The benefits ran out. People are graduating from college that can't find a job except for something menial or part-time usually. And so that's a huge problem that nobody wants to face, and they hide under numbers because they tweaked them. Now, almost 95 million Americans are permanently out of the workforce of working age. 95 million in a country of 320 million. And you got to remember, when you say a country that size, a lot of those aren't working because they're children. So it's a huge problem, and nobody wants to talk about it, particularly the politicians, because they know they've done nothing. Then there's a picture, a caricature of Hillary Clinton. Oh, she's going to fix everything. You know, Hillary, she's going to have Bill as her economic guru, and he's going to fix everything. Yeah, right. If you believe that, well, I feel sorry for you. And then there's a picture of Donald Trump making a speech. Now, Trump's under a lot of heat right now because of a remark that he made, which if you really listen to what he was saying and what it was all about, it was not a big problem. Boy, everybody's jumped on the guy because they want to get rid of him. But Trump's probably the guy that knows more about creating jobs than anyone because he is a private businessman, and that's what he's done all his life. So, you know, I think we need to listen to him, whether you like him or not. He's got a lot of good ideas. I don't agree with him on everything. Some of the things he would want to create, I probably would despise. But on the other hand, you got to take the good with the bad a little bit, and you need to look at, you know, what's out there. Then there's a picture of a closed sign. Now, if you get outside of the Beltway in New York, in those areas, you see a lot of closed signs, a lot of boarded up buildings. Try going out to Appalachia, coal country, and see how many places are closed up. It's becoming a ghost town out there. It's just amazing. And then I've got a picture that shows barbed wire with the word freedom emblazoned over it, because if we don't get big government out of our lives to the point where we can actually use our individual talents to produce something, we're going to be behind that barbed wire forever. That's what they're creating for us, folks. And then there's a picture of the headquarters of the Federal Reserve. You know, that big entity in the sky that knows better than we do. It's all tied in with the New World Order and all kinds of stuff that we don't even understand. But they're the ones that create the money. And they're the ones that have created a lot of the problem, because they have kept the stock market running by pumping money into it that really isn't real. You know, you go on the computer and add a couple of digits here, subtract a couple over there, everything's fine, right? Nope, doesn't work that way, unless you're in China. And we probably operate our Fed pretty similar to the way the Chinese operate their money system, and they're not doing so well right now either. But they can hide it much better than we can. Then there's a picture of Wall Street. You know, Wall Street, these 27-year-old gurus of finance that are only concerned about what a company looks like in the next quarterly cycle, that's all they're concerned about. That's why we never look in the real future to where we need to go, and that's why so many things are failing and falling apart miserably. And that's why your stock portfolio, if you still have one, goes up and down erratically, mostly down. If you notice, every time it drops and it recovers, it never recovers quite back to where it came from. And also, when they say, well, the stock market's doubled, yeah, but how many years have gone by? If you apply the same rules that you do with inflation and money, stock market should probably be up 20 times to be even. So it's all a big crapshoot. But finally, there's hope in that picture of the cross, which is on the Bible, on the flag, because America was a country founded under God, and there is a way forward, but we need to get a little bit more divine guidance on what we do and ask for help. We are mortal human beings, and we fail miserably. So before I go into a lot of detail, I'm going to bring my good friend Mark Collier on. Mark, we had planned to do this show on let me get him on first. Hang on. Morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning, Jim. I'm ready to go. It's lovely out here in the mountains. I was worried about you. I figured you'd had to build an ark and head on down the river there the way you got rained on. I guess it was Monday afternoon. Holy cow. It was a mess. But I'm glad to hear you're alive and well.
Let me tell you a little bit about that before we get started. We had planned to do this show on Monday morning, but it was very iffy with the weather. And being on a satellite connection, if a black cloud comes over at the wrong time, it cuts you off. So I decided to postpone it, and we moved it to this morning, which was a good thing because today is bright and sunny. It's going to be blazing hot and humid with all that rain we've had, but it's sunny. It'll dry out. Monday, it wasn't bad during the day. We had one short blast came through. And then it was gone, and I thought, oh, well, things would look a lot better. Well, boy, about 6:30 or 7 o'clock, the rain came down like something out of Noah's Ark. And I have a koi pond out in front of my house. It's a very nice pond that we had put in, and we did a lot of the work ourselves, my wife especially. And the only thing is, you know, you got to watch the water level. But we did build a drain into it, so that I can turn a switch to drain water if need be. And thank God I did, because I had to dump 3 or 4 inches out of that thing about 4 times in the middle of the rain and the storm, and it was really coming down. We got something like 7 inches of rain in about 3 hours, which around here floods everything. But all is well. We got through it all right, and then yesterday started getting better, so here we are. But so, you know, that was a rough day. We didn't have power for about 10 hours either, so It was kind of ugly. I compare it to the longest day because it was June the 6th. But by the way, my next show, which will be up tomorrow morning early, is about the longest day in about the 3 days of June that we've forgotten. But I won't say anything more about that till tomorrow. I plan to also do that somewhere back in that cycle time, but the weather kind of changed things. But anyway, Mark, I'm looking at what's going on, and you know we know that the unemployment rate, they have a ridiculous number they've assigned to that. And we have, these 95, almost 95 million people, adult working age people that are out of work. And yet Obama's talking about, oh, everything's great, you know. And, of course, the Republicans are so busy trying to slam Trump, they can't figure out anything themselves, or they never have been able to. But here's Trump, who's got a lot of ideas. I've read some of his stuff. I've looked at his tax plan. It's not my favorite, but it's certainly a huge improvement over what we've got now. But yet, all you see in Washington is cynicism, and it's like these guys could care less what happens as long as they're protected. So what do we do about this problem? What can Trump do, or anybody do, to turn this country around financially? And I'm talking about the reason I play Honey is because people don't have any money anymore.
Well, when you say what the solution is, well, let me tell you what the solution is not, and then we can go from there. How's that? The solution is not more business regulations. The solution is not suffocating expenses and onerous weight on small business, primarily from Obamacare. All right, you cannot do that to small businesses. They just don't have the wherewithal. All right. Everything from taxes to regulations to, the things put out by the EPA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just goes on and on and on and on. What we have created here is not an environment conducive to entrepreneurship. Oh, I can make a better mousetrap, or I've got a better service, or I've got a different way. In order for that to pop through to the surface, it takes an awful lot of guts, it takes an awful lot of work, and it takes a little bit of capital, all right, in most cases, sometimes more than others. None of these ingredients or elements are present in today's day and age. I'm thinking that we have to change it's almost a cultural change in Washington. These people think, oh, well, if we just funnel some more money through the Defense Department, that'll keep things going. No, that's not going to work, all right? I mean, that may help a few defense contractors who are, attached at the hip to the federal government's expenditures, but that's not going to actually create any more work. We have a serious structural problem in this country, and it's going to come down to this, and we can talk about that if you want. But we have these people out of work because the nature of work has changed. We cannot have all of our productive energies, capabilities, and technology shipped overseas to encourage them to go ahead and send goods back to us inexpensively. You know, these trade policies have not helped us, and this has been going on for, almost 30 years. So this is what you get when you're stupid, right? Let's just say, you're careless, negligent. You don't know. You're not an economist. You don't have any business background. You're a lawyer, all right? Lawyers see things, with T's crossed and I's dotted, and that's it, right? Because we said so, it is. No, it doesn't work that way. And, Jim, I thought about it. This one's a tough question because this really gets to how we're going to make it through this. Are we going to open this up and let people do their thing, and let creative energy out? Or are we just going to smother everybody into some massive, massive welfare state where – people just get used to, I'll just sit on the couch and eat Fritos while I play, some sort of electronic game and collect my $1,100 every month or whatever it is. So, it's just not going to work. And then you've got this immigration thing where people are coming over and these folks are taking the jobs from Americans. That annoys the heck out of me simply because, look, If this work were available, it would find a natural stasis in terms of pay. So we arbitrarily say, okay, now the minimum wage is $15 an hour? Oh, heck no. Not for a bunch of 17 to 21-year-olds who never had a job before. It doesn't work that way. And I just have to think that we are in the cusp of a real problem. Hillary Clinton is not going to help this. She's going to make this worse. That's her nature. That, her husband started this ball rolling. So, back when NAFTA, we've got to go ahead and make sure Ross Perot looks like an idiot. Well, Ross Perot, for all of his faults, was not an idiot. Here was a man that was worth $1 billion or so back in 1992. And he knew a little something about, you know, computers, software, putting people to work, you know, research, development, and improving productivity. Well, let me tell you, we haven't had much of that since about 1998. And you're right. It's
come
the heart of its Federal Reserve, and I think it's even worse than that. I think it goes to New World Order. They want America poor, broke, and easily pliable and easily manipulated. I don't know. There's what I wanted to open with.
No, I've just come up for air for a minute. No, but that's good.
Because this really gets to me, Jim. I'm sorry.
No, you're passionate about it, and you should be, because it's a mess. No, I don't be sorry. I didn't mean that. But, you know, I wrote down a list before I came on the air of some of the things that I see, and there were some of those things you covered them. I mean, one of them is taxes. Why are American businesses taxed higher than any company in the free world? And you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, first of all, and this is for my liberal friends, God bless them, you got to understand when you tax a business, you're not taxing the business. You're taxing yourself because you're going to pay for it in the price. That's how it works. That's when the prices go up. I mean, it's just the way it is. And if you don't like that, you don't agree, that you think whatever you want. But businesses, it's a cost of doing business. And a cost of doing business gets passed on to the consumer. So when you slam dunk, it's just like these class action lawsuits. Oh, man, we really took care of them. We got $10 billion for cigarette users or whatever. And no, you know, each one of those guys that's on the class action probably gets $50-$60, and the lawyers make all the money. And then the tobacco company, and that's not a good choice because, you know, smoking's probably not such a great idea. But, you know, if you want to smoke, I mean, without bothering other people, you've got a right to do it, in my opinion. And we're still a free country, at least last time I looked, but you never know. But the point is, all that ended up on the price. And so you look at what happened. So there was a huge problem. Well, so taxes. And then you got Obamacare, which is, in my opinion, a tax. It's a tax and a fee. It's everything that's bad. And just because you have health insurance that you're paying dearly for doesn't mean you're going to have health care. And we're seeing that. I went to the doctor a few weeks ago. I had an appointment. And it's always been the policy where I go to be able to get in within about 20 minutes of your time. And it took an hour and a half because the guy is overloaded because doctors have quit. And so, you know, you got one doctor picking up the pace for a couple or maybe even three sometimes. The nurses are pulling their hair out. And so that's what happens because you ration resources. That's what Obamacare is all about. There's no other way to look at it. Now, here's another one, though, that ties to the individual. And this is the part where we have really screwed up. The first is personal initiative. You can't, you know, I hear all these people, they go into areas of town where nobody's working, we're going to create jobs if you let us develop this. Well, first of all, you're not going to create jobs for people that don't have any skills. That's the problem.
Yes.
We've got more and more unskilled people in America, and a lot of them, of course, are these immigrants that are coming in. They're illegal, but they're getting those low-skilled jobs that some of their unskilled used to hold, what's left of them. And so, people, you got to show some personal initiative to do something for yourself. People like go-getters. I went to night school while I was in the Army to get a master's degree, not because the master's degree in itself was going to do anything to give me a job, but boy, it looks good on your resume when somebody finds out that while you were working full-time, you went to night school, because it shows that you have initiative and you try to improve yourself. And that's what an employer wants. He wants to know when he spends money on you that you're going to make money for him. And if you're not going to do that, why would he hire you in the first place? It's not a welfare society. That's what liberals forget. They think it's a welfare society. Everybody's got a right to a job. Nobody's got a right to pretty much anything except what the Constitution says. And sadly, they're the rights they're trying to take away from us. So the point is, you got to get off your butt and get to work. And that ties in with the next one, appropriate education. If you know that it's a tight job market and certain skills are in demand but others aren't, don't get a degree in underwater basket weaving. There's no market for that. And that's tongue-in-cheek, folks. I'm just using that as an example of something ridiculous. I mean, these people go out and get all these degrees that are basically worthless. So you look what the market will bear. Look what the market will bear and get trained accordingly. That's what you got to do. And then the other thing is we've got to do something about the education process to make it something that is worthwhile to our students. This Common Core is an absolute disaster. It's taking all initiative away. They sit in the classroom doing tests all day and get frustrated. They don't get, you know, little boys and girls don't get to go out and have a little bit of recess with recreation. Now, any 8-year-old normal, healthy little boy, if you make him sit in the classroom for 6 or 7 hours straight without getting some steam burnt off, is going to be taking drugs for ADHD. Let me tell you, that's half the problem. The kids are not burning off all that excess energy that they have. Okay? So the personal side in education are really, really critical. And we keep throwing money at education and it goes down the sewer. The test scores keep dropping. The kids drop out more. The inner city schools are an absolute disaster. And the one place where some initiative could really do something to change something in the inner city is the thing that the teachers union fights so hard. They fight it because they don't care about the kids. They care about just keeping the dues coming in. And there are a lot of great teachers. I'm not criticizing the teachers. I'm criticizing the system that has been created to manipulate what they do. So it's a huge, huge problem. And then just the last couple of things. If we don't get this spending problem solved, what's happening is the government has sucked every dollar out that should be used to create business and make business go. That's what's happened. Secondly, real capitalism, not crony capitalism, which is what we have today. Real capitalism requires risk. And if you want small business to thrive, you've got to reward those who start something with an idea and they take risk and they make it work. They've got to be the ones rewarded, not some board of directors guy sitting up by Wall Street that's wheeling and dealing with the White House on his next contract. That's not the way to make things work for America. Finally, and you hit it on the head, I'm not even going into detail, regulations. Do we need some regulations? Absolutely. Life situations, keeping people alive and safe, those are critical. But all of this crap we've done today is just absolutely absurd. You know, the transgender bathroom requirements, all this other stuff, the nonsense. It is nonsense. At the most, it's maybe one half of 1% of the country. So we've got to wake up and realize what is really important if we want to survive as a free country. Now it's your turn.
If I had the applause meter going, you'd get two rounds there. You know that you ought to have that as the opening statement at the GOP convention. But here's really what I see, and here's the implication. All right, and we have to think about this. What are we actually leaving behind for our kids? All right, you can see the problem. You know, my 53-year-old brother-in-law is living in his mother's fifth wheel and collecting, you know, EBT, their EBT cards that are reloaded. He has no chance, you know, and it's starting to affect his health. That and the alcohol is probably not helping him much. You can see this in this. Because if he could work, he probably would. He's a carpenter kind of guy. All right. You can see it in our children, okay? You know, why would my son go back to school again if he was making an adequate salary in the first place, right? You know, the more levels of, you know, advanced learning you go through is directly correlated to how much you're trying to earn, or just an intellectual quest is one thing. But when you say, okay, I need specifics for a particular type of job, i.e. transportation, logistics, something like that, that would involve, you know, some advanced courses, all right, and some deeper, not broader, but deeper knowledge. Yes, of course. And you know, you would probably use that to great advantage during, you know, your term in the Army. But here's what it really amounts to. We've got all these kids sitting around not doing anything, are not reaching their full potential. Let's just put it that way. They're, you know, 60% engaged, if they're engaged at all. Okay? What does that mean? Well, that kind of means that all of our pensions and the pension state, and believe it or not, it's huge. I was looking into this the other day just because I am who I am. It's all underfunded, whether it's municipal, state, federal or private. Look at CalPERS. That's a California pension fund. They're almost bankrupt. Yeah, you know, fraud, this, that, and the other. The Central States Pension Fund, which is part of the north central area collection of Teamsters, that thing's been in such disrepair, they don't even know where to start. They're talking about 35 cents on the dollar. What? Mm-hmm. In other words, and you can apply that to stretch that out to Social Security, disability, any of the other things that, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, all of it. If you are that underfunded because there are so few people working to fund it, you might as well just tell everybody, man, we've really messed this up. But here's where political cowardice comes in. They will not talk about this. Well, it's the full faith and credit of the United States government, right? Okay, fine. But here's the thing. You guys have deliberately underfunded this to turn this country into, I don't know, Venezuela or Argentina. I'm going to go there because I think this has been intentional. I don't think they want us strong, healthy, and vibrant. They want us to be easily manipulated. And the best way to do that is have almost a third or 30% of the population, let's just call it, completely, totally, and wholly dependent on the state for their livelihood and welfare. Now, of that 95 million, Jim, you have to actually be real about it and say, okay, well, there's some 45, 48 million retirees tossed in there. Okay, but there's someone.
But how many of those, Mark, how many of those retirees retired not because they wanted to, but because they had to? You got to remember that too, because their guys retiring earlier and earlier, and a lot of them didn't want to, but they kind of get pushed out of a job. So that number, yeah, I agree, there's a lot, but it's not as high as you're saying there. Trust me.
Well, I think part of it is, Jim, that the environment for employment, you know, just getting up, you know, reasonable hour in the morning, going to work, showing up on time, putting in a full day's work, and going home. I'm not so sure that model works anymore. But it would sure be nice if you had the choice. I think you're right, and you hit on it in a much deeper way than I was even going to touch on it. Personal initiative. All right, you have to be able to take care of yourself. You have to want to. All right, not have, you know, mom bring you, you know, a sandwich, you know, at lunchtime. You're going to have to go ahead and go out and take care of yourself, be willing to take some risk, but be responsible for who you are, what you are, and where you're going. You know, you were talking about, you know, looking at what employers are looking for. Well, that would be, you know, wholly dependent upon your ability to go ahead and do research. Okay, you have to get out and actually ask them what kind of skills are you looking for. Oh, well, I didn't know that. You know, and you take a look at this Ponzi scheme called student loans. You know, like $1.3 trillion of this stuff. And they just keep saddling these people with debt, and they come out and go, oh, okay, now I'm a welder. Welder for what? Right? You know, you're not going – there aren't any welding jobs. And I'm not picking on those folks, but these – for-profit colleges have absolutely raped people who thought, oh, I'm going to go get those skills. So you have to be very careful about what you do and where you go. What it also brings up, and I think, you know, this is where I knew you were probably wanting to go with this. We need someone who understands what a business is. Profit is not necessarily a dirty word, but it can be. You know, you got to be careful. But I think we need somebody to look at this situation and say, well, geez, we can't do that. This is crazy. You're choking the life out of everything. You know, the Fortune 500 cannot run this country by themselves. Fortune 400 can't do it, right? That's not enough jobs. You know, and there's your point. These companies, not all, those companies need to continue doing what they're doing, but we need this whole undergrowth of new businesses, kind of like springtime in the mountains. You thought you cleared all that dead
right.
wood away, and then all of a sudden the shoots come back up. That's what's supposed to be happening
correct.
In a normal and healthy economy. It's not. So why is it not? Are we not giving it enough sunlight, nutrients, whatever, water? But in the case of jobs, and you know, you and I kind of saw some of this coming. Where's that next generation going to go? And the implication
that's
is
scary.
That if yes, because they have nowhere to go, Jim. It's not that they don't really, some of them don't want to work. I'm sure there are a few of them that are lazy. But I am telling you that the majority of them would like to be able to do something that, one, interests them, and two,
of course.
That provides enough income that they can actually live and get out heck out of the house. It's very
right.
difficult for kids to go find jobs today. It's just that difficult. I'm thinking that this was
well,
all by
to,
design. I am a little cynical in that regard. Go ahead.
They used to teach the job search as part of a requirement before you graduated from school. They taught people what you have to go through, and it was very, very worthwhile. They don't do any of that anymore. They teach these kids, they build up their self-esteem like they're something special, and they get out in the street and they realize, man, I'm not qualified to do anything. So what do? They go home and play pajama boy or girl in the basement of their parents' home, and they're still there in their 20s. One out of three 20-somethings are living home with mommy and daddy. It's kind of scary stuff. But I wanted to comment on one other thing that you brought up, because you mentioned this problem with the loans and these privately owned schools, diploma mills and so forth. Some of them are good, by the way, but a lot of them aren't. And, you know, of course, I just had to mention, because the big thing that flapped it all up was, you know, Trump University with this case with this American man who was of Spanish descent, who's a judge, who's also hooked up with La Raza, the La Raza Lawyers Association, and that's really what Trump was upset about. But I just had to point out for my audience, because everybody said, oh, Trump's been ripping off all these kids, and now he's playing racism, and the Republicans are even saying that. He didn't say racism. It wasn't probably the best way to describe what he was talking about, but I knew what he was talking about, and they do too. They're looking for a hatchet on him. You know, it's just the way it is. But I hope they all know that at the same time, there's this other private school called Laureate University, and it's not primarily in the United States. It's in developing countries. And over a period of time, they paid Bill Clinton $16.5 million as their chancellor. Now, what do you think the chancellor did? The chancellor went around
yeah.
sucking up money for the school. You know, he was a sponge for the school. So they paid him $16.5. Now, the reason I brought that up, because you want to talk about diploma mills, there was a lady that called in to Sean Hannity yesterday talking about that university. She lives in Alabama now, but she came here from another country, but she has very good English. She said, yeah, she got her program from Laureate. They told her when she started with it, it was going to cost $17,000. In the end, it cost $120,000. So here we go, folks. So let's just be real clear, my friends. Let's just be real clear. When you want to talk about the Donald and all of this horrible school that he created, you better look at the other side of the coin too. And that's usually the case in all of these things. I just thought that was good to point out, because it's real and it happened. Now, what I want to do, I want to take a quick break, and we're going to just put on some short music, because I got to go get a bottle of water and wet my whistle. But we're going to play a Beach Boys song, which, if we could get people back to work again and get America worried about America first again, wouldn't it be nice? We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, folks, and we'll come back for one more segment before we're done. Be back with you in a minute, Mark. Hang on there.
All right.
Take a night and stay together.
Wouldn't it be nice to have a job with benefits? That would be the title for that song if it was written in 2016. Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, you look at all these numbers, and the one thing we didn't talk about with unemployment is the other problem is that, you know, every job created, they count it against the employment statistics. So if one guy's having to hold down three jobs to feed his family, that's counted as three jobs. So no wonder they don't show any unemployment. I mean, it's just crazy. But seriously, I just kind of want to wrap it up with the last segment here, and I just want to kind of put a picture in your mind of what it looks like to me where we are in America, and then we can talk just briefly about that. And it's this. My grandfather, he was a seafaring guy. He was a lighthouse keeper, and he fished all of his life. He lived on the coast. And one of the things that he did as a hobby was building model ships in a bottle. Now, I'm sure you've all seen those. If you go to a beach place, they have them for sale. Matter of fact, I found one of his years ago for sale in a shop for a lot of money. I couldn't afford it. I guess one of my cousins made the money on it. I don't know. But it was good to see it. It was his work. And so I think about that ship in that bottle, you know, standing upright with all the sails unfurled and everything. And I think to myself, okay, let's say America is that ship in the bottle right now. It's enclosed in that bottle. And the bottle is that's enclosed, it includes, you know, taxes, Obamacare, lousy education, deficit spending, no real capitalism, just crony capitalism, regulations, you know, all this stuff. How do we get the ship of state, America, out of that bottle? You go.
Oh, well, somebody's going to have to take a hammer to that glass very carefully. But I think that, you know, you brought it up, and that's a great analogy, actually. We've been completely corralled. I love the barbed wire analogy, because what we're doing is we're actually limiting our potential. And we need...
Yes.
We need enlightened government that says, look, we've got to turn the people loose. It's what we've been doing for the last three, four administrations has not been working. I think it's an absolute hoot that Hillary Clinton sticks it to Barack Obama by saying we're going to put Bill in charge of everything to fix it. What do you think about that? That was sort of a slap in the face, was it? Well, you know, I mean, and here's the thing. I think ideology, people forget, ideologies does not make it so. Realism, pragmatic approach to solving problems, I think that makes it so. What say you?
Well, I agree. You know, I mean, everything, what I see as a problem, you know, and as you know, I'm quite conservative, but I'm also a realist, and you got to have some realism. The problem we've got in America, and the thing that worries me the most, is the fact that we've got the extremes have taken charge of lots of things, and we've gotten to the point where there's no way for these people to ever talk to one another. And until we start talking as Americans, we can't solve anything, because neither side is going to get everything they want. Even if the liberals pack the courts and everything else, if they try to implement all the things they want to do, it's going to be some kind of a, literally or otherwise, a bloodbath, because a lot of people just are not going to stand for it. I really believe that. America's a little different than most countries. We're not as pliable. You know, we're more, we got a lot of the old West spirit in us that comes back from why the people came here in the first place. And, of course, it's only been in recent years where they've tried to destroy everything in history. But people will still know about those things. I was talking about that in my show about the problems we have on unemployment, because of those people were yearning for a real opportunity that came here, not for handout. So we've got to instill that. But I think, going back to that bottle, I think it's going to take somebody not to take the bottle apart gently. I think they got to take a ball peen hammer on it. Just don't hit it where the ship is. Let it collapse around the ship, and the ship will be standing again. And that means you got to rein in the bureaucracy. You got to, which, and all the things that go with that. We got way too many people working in those jobs doing nothing. You know, there is no, I guarantee you, if you go through the federal government and you look at all of those agencies, I'll guarantee you, as a minimum, there's a 20% unnecessary situation there. The only types of jobs that are really critical for America are the ones that really accomplish something. You got these guys that they come in the morning, they got an inbox full, in the afternoon it's on the other side of the table. Then the next day it goes to the next guy to be reviewed. Then it gets reviewed again, then it goes to the supervisor who's trying to create another position for himself so he can get promoted again. And maybe at the end of the week he might take a look at some of that stuff. But it just goes on and on and on. And then when he leaves his job, another guy comes in and he reinvents the wheel all over again. Because I found out from the time that I worked with the feds, and I got out of it because I couldn't stand it anymore. When I got out of the Army, I worked for the feds for a while, and I hated it. But what happens is they reinvent the wheel with the same results every few years. You know, it's just like down here in Florida back in 1988, they wanted to put this superhighway through. It got shot down by the public, and now 30 years later they're trying to propose the same damn thing. I mean, it's just the way government and bureaucracies are. They can't help themselves. And the problem we have is we elect people with good intentions, but once they get up there and they see how entrenched everything is, they just said, well, I guess I'm just going to have to go along to get along. So they give up. We need some fighters. We need some fighters. We need some change, and it's going to take some pain. But a lot of people are already suffering a lot of pain, and we've got to somehow figure out a way to get through that. And I think what the government needs is a complete audit of all of the organizations to see what really is important and what isn't, and then start cutting some of the stuff that's unnecessary out. I think that's got to happen. And you can even do that in the Defense Department. There's plenty of fat in the Defense Department as well. But, you know, and they create all these social engineering things that need to all be done away with, because that has nothing to do with getting us where we need to be. That's just somebody's pie-in-the-sky ideology, as we say, and it's just crazy. So that's the first step. That's the one promise I have in Trump, because being a businessman and outside, and I know he's got his problems, and everybody says, oh, he's just going to go in there and be a dictator. And I don't think so. If he tries to be a dictator, the Republicans would impeach Trump. They wouldn't impeach Obama, but they would. Impeach
Yeah,
Trump.
Jeb Bush would be up there.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Oh,
Jeb
what
Bush would
schmuck.
Be up there seething and stomping, you know. But so the point is, I think Trump realizes, you know, he has his manner. I mean, you know, think about it. The guy goes out to work a deal, right, in New York City of all places, okay? So what does he have to do? Well, the first thing he's got to do is he's got to buy, literally, the unions. I mean, whether you want to admit it or not, you say, oh, that's wrong. Well, you know what? You can't work in New York City unless everybody's palms get greased. It's the whole city government that operates that way. It's been that way forever. It goes back to Tammany Hall and beyond. So you've got to do some things that are a bit unsavory. But by doing that, you're also affording a lot of people to have a job. You know? And so you've got to weigh and measure. I mean, life isn't perfect. You know, the only place that's perfect is heaven. And, you know, we're not there yet. We're not even close. So the point is, you got to look at those things, and then and if you want to criticize it, that's fine. But then let's be equal opportunity criticizers, because my God, what's been going on with this administration? And they all look like, oh, there's been no scandal whatsoever. Really? We're gun running to Mexico. I mean, look at all the stuff we've done. So I just, you know, let's be equal about it. Okay, yeah, there are problems on both sides, and I'll be the first to admit that. But the question is, a guy like Trump at least is willing to look outside of the Washington box to try to come up with some ideas. I just hope he doesn't get co-opted, because there's always that possibility, although he's always kind of been his own guy. And the fact that he's telling Ryan right now, when Ryan basically called him a racist, and Trump just kind of says, yeah, what do I care what you think? But he does need to...
Well, you know, also, the thing that concerns me, and I noticed this the other night, and I heard a little snarky piece on it. He's using a teleprompter so he doesn't get off message. All right? Get that. That's part of his, evolution as a political candidate. But that's the first way the handlers get a hold of you. You know, we're going to say this, you're going to stick to the message, and here it is. Boom. Read it. Well, hold on a minute. That's not Donald Trump. You know, he might do that for about three minutes, and then he'll start calling somebody a bimbo or something. But, you know, you've got to be careful, and you're absolutely right. They're going to try to mold him into something that's more acceptable to everybody. But let me tell you something. He doesn't have to kowtow to Mitch McConnell. He certainly doesn't have to kowtow to Paul Ryan. All right, look.
No, certainly not.
The electoral map.
Or Lindsey Graham.
And I'm going to close with this. The electoral map does not favor our way of life, not anymore. If you look at where all the electors come from, with the exception of Texas and Florida, it looks pretty grim, right? I was looking at this last night. Hillary Clinton starts out with like a 50 to 100 electoral lead. So in other words, for a Republican, GOP, conservative, whatever, he has to overcome some huge obstacles. That would be North Carolina, Virginia, some of that going on in Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico. You're never going to win California, Oregon, or Washington. So if you exclude some of these northeastern states and the far west coast and all of that, and you lose one of these in the middle, no, Ohio, game over. You know, it's a very delicate thing. I understand what they're trying to do for him so that he has a fighting chance, but that just means that those of us who believe in what he's trying to do, or at least give him a chance to do his thing, because really it's no choice between Ms. Clinton and Mr. Trump, we have to get out and we have to work for it. Because here it is. This may be our last best chance to address these issues. I can tell you Hillary Clinton will destroy it, what we perceive as our country and our feelings toward it, our what we've been taught in school. It's going to go away. It starts with the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, and so on. She doesn't care. Now, having said that, you have to say, well, our job's a real problem. The core of the problem is that we don't have enough people in the boat with an oar moving your boat analogy along the water toward a goal. So here's what it is. People have to get in board, sit down, grab a paddle, let's go. And if we do that, we have a chance to turn this around. So there's my little piece.
I agree. Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that the only thing that I see that's really positive about all this is I see large numbers of people that are looking at doing something they've never done before. There's a significant number of Democrats that just don't want anything to do with Hillary Clinton. They're more conservative than most. They're not part of the group that controls the party, but they've maintained their membership because it's just family tradition, if you will. And I think you're going to see some of that, and I think the independents as well. If Trump will just lower the volume on the personal stuff just a little bit, you don't have to eliminate it. Trump's going to be Trump, and that's one of the things that makes him attractive to people. Because he isn't politically correct, and I think that's a plus within reason. But he just needs to watch that a little bit, and then he needs to make sure he stays on message. He needs to stay on the immigration issue. He needs to talk more about taxes and what he can do to improve that stuff. You know, and because he's got some good points. If you go to his website, DonaldJTrump.com, he's got about five or six good talking papers that are quite good. They're not perfect. None of these guys are perfect. He's actually put out more information than most of them. And, you know, they keep saying, well, when is he going to give us a position? Well, go read the thing, folks. DonaldJTrump.com. Go look at his position papers. Read them. He tells you where he's going. And none of them are going to give you the details down to the weeds. They never do that. They can't. Because until they get in office and see what the climate is, you know, especially if they've never been there to Washington, they've got to hold a little bit back because they may have to make a few alterations and tweaks as they go. That's part of the process. It's a democratic republic. It's not the president's not a dictator, and Trump doesn't want to be a dictator. People worry about that kind of stuff and say, "Man, you didn't worry about the guy we've had for the last almost 8 years. And you're going to worry about Trump? Are you kidding me?" So it's just a bunch of hype, and it's really the establishment guys. It's their way of thinking they can do him in because they're petrified of Donald Trump. And if they should be. you know, it's been business as usual. This goes all the way back, with the exception of a little break in the Reagan, but the bureaucracy was still screwed up. He could never really take on the whole bureaucracy because it's entrenched. You can't get rid of them. So this goes all the way back, really, to the end of World War II. That's when it all started.
Really?
I mean, we were more patriotic then. You had Democrats then that would salute the flag. And, you know,
right.
I mean, now you look at it, you look what they do. I mean, Obama the other day had his hand over his heart, but it wasn't over his heart. It was over the other side of his chest. Standing
oh,
at some
are
event.
You kidding?
You got to be kidding me, folks. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable, this guy. But anyway, so that's enough of that. But yeah, you're right. I think that this could be very, very exciting, or it could be a very, very big disaster come November. And we've got to decide which way do we want to go. We know that if you go the Hillary direction, or if it were somebody else, it doesn't matter who it is, it's going to be pretty much the road we're already on. So if you're happy with that, go vote for him. Say never Trump and go vote for him. But it amazes me the guys that I know that are conservative who are still saying never Trump, and I try to bring up the Supreme Court and say, oh, he'll never appoint one of those guys. I mean, where are you guys coming from? Trump, if you look at Trump's overall career, he's got a good reputation for doing what he says he's going to do. Okay? He just talks a little too much sometimes. So do I. So what? You know, I mean, well, think about it, Mark. You know that. I mean, it's just the way it is. But, you know, sometimes you need to talk a lot. I'll just leave
it with
this.
Sometimes you just need to get out there and start stirring it up so people start to think about it. I think he does it with a purpose. But, boy, sometimes it comes off a little rough, Jim. I mean, what he meant to say was, this judge is associated with these and affiliated with those people. How am I going to get a fair hearing? That's not necessarily racist.
That's what he means.
That's conflict of interest, which is real. I mean, I think that's a legitimate concern. Now, you don't need
to... Well, Sotomayor even said that would be the case.
Right.
Sotomayor even said
so
that. She said if you elect a minority person, they're going to use that. You know, so realize it.
We vote
so anyway.
our ethnicity is, I believe, her quote. But, you know, you sit there and you think, well, wait a minute. So somebody said something about it. Now, he gets a little defensive when he's attacked. I get it. But, you know, now he needs to thin this out because Hillary Clinton is a real pro. She's been doing this a long, long time. And she's got the entire establishment of Democrats firmly entrenched. And I'm sure some Republicans thinking, well, how are we going to do this SOB in? Because we don't want to lose our goodies. Well, it's why we, you and I, everybody in your audience and friends, family, you know, business associates, all need to start to think about how we're going to go ahead and give him the lift he needs to overcome some of these inherent deficits in our electoral college. Because if you look at the map,
there you go.
Oh boy, he starts out down about 100. You know, and that's not good, because if we don't get a conservative in there now, we may never get the chance again. And it goes back to immigration,
well,
it goes back to people involved in the system and all of that.
Right.
I mean, it's just all very basic. So there you have it.
Well, that's good. I'm going to close with something that, based upon talking about sometimes you need to speak up, and Trump does that. I mean, he's the one that brought the issues on the table that we would have never seen otherwise. They would have never brought them up. But, you know, Mark, that I've been involved in this fight down here about some roads they want to build through the pristine parts of Florida that are really just done to force-feed development. They say not, but you can look at the map and see where they're going. And last night, the Florida Department of Transportation had an open house here in Gainesville for citizens to come and provide comments. They wanted written comments. You weren't allowed to speak. But this group from East Alachua and over in Putnam County next door, you know where that is because you used to live down here, which is primarily a rural group, we presented to the FDOT representative, hand-carried by a lawyer, over 500 comments that politely said, just say no. We made a presentation. And they were speechless. They didn't know what to think. So, folks, when you've got an issue that you think is really important, you know, don't be afraid to speak up. When we started with this whole process, it started before that with the building developers, you know, there were half a dozen people involved, and now we've got 600 to 1,200 people that are ready to move when they need to. Not to protest, but just to be in the audience and ask questions and state what's on their mind. It's very, very peaceful, and it's a mixed bag. You got liberals, you got conservatives, you got agnostics, you got everything. You got everything out there. We got the whole gamut because people finally realize that some issues transcend everything else. And if, you know, where you live, if that's important to you, and it is to most people, you know, stuff can happen in Washington that's going to impact you, but it's not going to impact you nearly as directly as what happens in your own backyard. So just remember that, folks. And I think there's a little bit of that you can apply to Donald Trump, and it makes it a little more understandable because the guy is concerned or he wouldn't be doing this. He's not doing this to get rich. He's not doing this for any other reason that he thinks. He's probably doing it because he's worried about what his kids and grandchildren are going to have left in the country, and that's a good cause for any of us to follow. So we'll end it on that today. Mark, once again, I thank you for being here, and we'll do it again. We'll just go forward.
My pleasure, sir.
And hopefully there won't be any hurricanes for a while. And, folks, I just want you all to know that tomorrow morning I'm having a special show that will be up at 8 in the morning, you know, but you can listen to it online later if you're not up. I'm always up early. And it's going to be about the 3 days of June that we've forgotten because we just passed those days, and they were very, very important days. And I'll just quickly tell you what they were. On June 4th, in 1942, the Battle for Midway began. Winning that battle 3 days later basically turned the American military force in the Pacific from a defensive to an offensive force. June 5th, 1942 for Midway. June 5th, 1944 was the day before D-Day, when the 101st Airborne, the Screaming Eagles, the Band of Brothers, that's when they were the advance force that flew over enemy lines behind the Germans in Normandy. What was their job? To take out the big German howitzers so that as the ships were sailing up in the mist the next morning to try to invade Normandy, which is a tough place to invade, and it was, they were designed to try to knock out as many of those ships as they could, and they took them out. They were able to take the big guns out, and the Germans weren't quite sure what was going on. And then, of course, June 6th was D-Day, you know, the longest day. I'm sure you've all seen the movie. And nobody in the media that I saw it a few places on the Internet, nobody in the media even mentioned what happened at this time. And to me, that's an absolute travesty. Because if we forget history, we're lost. We got to remember our history and where we came from. That's it for tonight, folks, or today, folks. God bless you all. I want you to have a very, very good day. Hopefully, if you are waterlogged, it'll clear up for you. And we're going to close with the Rolling Stones and Satisfaction. Bye now.